Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K-Wise Whitehead. We are having a very important conversation today because this is a big day in Maryland. It's a big day in America. And dare I say, it's a big day around the world. This is huge. We have been battling with the novel coronavirus, which was named COVID-19, all year. It feels like this has been the longest year of our collective lives, because we have lost on a scale that outside of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, we couldn't even imagine. We were overwhelmed thinking about the number of people that died in one day on 9/11. We were overwhelmed thinking about school shootings at Sandy Hook. But to deal with this type of ongoing grief and trauma has been overwhelming for those of us who are on the sidelines, but more difficult for those on the front line. So today, we have an opportunity to speak with two people who are not only on the front line, but also were the first ones to receive the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccines. I'm joined now by Sean Hendricks, an MSN, a resident nurse, a nursing director of medicine, cardiac services, and the telesitter program at the University of Maryland Medical Center. How are you, Nurse Hendricks? Thank you for joining me.
I'm well, and I must agree with you. The COVID pandemic we thought was going to be, you know, last a couple of months. And here we are. It's now December. And we've been battling this since March. So it's been almost a year.
Almost a year.
And I'm feeling well today. I'm feeling well.
I am so glad you're here. We just can't wait to speak with you about this. But I want to introduce our second guest, Dr. Sean Henry, a professor of surgery at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and director of Division of Wound Healing and Metabolism at UMMC's R. Adams Coley Shock Trauma Center. Dr. Henry, did I get all of that correct?
It's a mouthful, I know. It is a mouthful. I'm a trauma surgeon and a general surgeon at the university. And, you know, I'm very happy to join you here and was very pleased to be one of the first at the university to receive the vaccine.
Now, I want to note for our listeners, because they don't have the pleasure of seeing you, that both Nurse Hendricks and Dr. Henry are African-American women. And so I think that as we're talking about this, and Dr. Henry, you can let me know if you agree, I think it's important for our community to understand where we are with this vaccine and the fact that we are stepping up and stepping in line, as Black women do, but to also show that this is something that we should get behind.
I absolutely agree with you, Dr. K. I think the African-American community has definitely had a very stormy history with scientific research and therefore has some trust issues with the scientific community with regard to participation in studies and believing what they're being told about their health, how to take care of their health, medications, et cetera. And I understand that as a doctor, this is something it's not necessarily part of our standard education, but it's certainly something if you've been in the business in any time, you know these stories about how African Americans have been treated. And so I completely and viscerally understand that skepticism that is out there. But I have to say times are changed and there is so much more transparency with regard to the way studies are conducted, the things that it's very rigorous, the standards that are that have to be met in order to have any drug or medication be utilized on human subjects. So there is a big background. There's lots of laws and lots of standards have been developed to prevent those tragedies that occurred in the past from ever happening again. And I think what has happened to us now is we failed to benefit from science in some ways because we don't participate. We don't know how things affect us differently, our population differently, because we don't participate in those studies. So I really, I'm going to appeal to the community to, you know, you got to have some faith. At some point, you have to have some faith. There have been checks and balances put in place that mean that this study, these studies have gone through rigorous hoops. I was one of the first to stand in line. So clearly I believe in the process.
Nurse Hendricks, let me come to you. Before you talk about your participation in the trial study, can you share with us what it has been like while we've been battling COVID-19 in this country? We've only read the newspapers, we've seen the growing numbers, but you've been on the front line. Can you talk about that experience?
So, I must say, you know, many who came in didn't make it out. We were seeing so many patients that came in with COVID. And because COVID was new on the front end, you know, there was no visitation because, again, we were very cognizant and careful about not having COVID pass to visitors that may, you know, come into the building. And so at the end of the day, there were some very, very sick patients, some on event, some not. But at the end of the day, they, you know, didn't have, you know, visitation. And so with that being said, you know, many of the patients that, you know, did die, they didn't die with their family members, you know, in person. So, you know, the nurses, I mean, they were careful and ensured that they literally sat at the bedside of these patients, held their hand till they breathed their last breath, in addition to ensuring that we were able to support them with the iPad technology so that, you know, the family members could see their family members while they were here. But they were in the best hands. And again, I couldn't give half the hospital overall, the nurses, the doctors, the physical therapists, the environmental services, dietary, everybody came together and we jumped in feet first to care for these patients day in and day out. Again, during a pandemic that we thought would last a short time, but it ended up again spanning over a very long period of time. And so we made sure that at the end of the day, we were their family away from family. Hmm.
Dr. Henry, let me ask you as a director of surgery, what was the moment for you when you realized that COVID-19 wasn't going to just be with us for a couple of weeks, that we were in the midst of something we'd never seen before?
Yeah, as the numbers of patients started to increase, I think one of the things I want to highlight is that we developed a plan pretty quickly when it became clear it was affecting, you know, not just Washington State, then to California and New York. And we watched that progression. There were certainly states and localities that were involved earlier. But I think the thing that we did very well in Maryland, and we did exceptionally well at the University of Maryland, was to really treat this like what it was, which is a disaster. And we have processes and plans that we just put into place right away of how are we going to deal? How are we going to build extra capacity? Meaning, how are we going to empty the beds that are full? And we, you know, hospital beds are chronically full anyway. ERs are chronically full anyway. How do you empty those spaces out to make room? And think about it, we built excess capacity by opening the convention center and other alternative care. We built a tent in the back of the hospital to hopefully be able to accommodate any overflow that we couldn't really deal with within the doors of the walls of the hospital. So I think the thing that we did so well was have a plan to start with and then pull that trigger. And again, just as Sean said, everybody pulled together. Didn't matter that, you know, I'm not a medicine doctor. I'm an intensivist. I'm boarded in critical care. So, you know, if there was a need to have a physician take a spot in an ICU, then you could flip the script and move over there. So that willingness to cooperate, that ability to sort of change what your normal job description is to something else. And obviously we had to make adjustments, physical adjustments to the facility, which, you know, I'm a trauma surgeon. So what we did in the ED, you know, we had to think about it. You know, any patient that came in could be COVID positive and not know it. Mm-hmm. And dealing with that uncertainty and having to treat everybody essentially as though they potentially have COVID, because we know that certain procedures that we do in the operating room are high risk for exposing staff and being sure we stay safe. So I don't know if I actually answered your question, those were the thoughts that I came up with.
That's what we want to just kind of, you know, we want to put some more stories behind it. We've been talking a lot from Dr. Fauci to epidemiologists to infectious disease specialists, but to now speak to people who both treated it, but who are also part of the treatment plan is something I want to get to the heart of. Nurse Hendricks, let me ask you, what did we learn? So earlier this year, it feels like there were a lot of things just being thrown at COVID-19. What have we learned since March?
So I got to tell you, to piggyback on to what Dr. Henry said, we had surge plan 1, 2, 3, 4 on through that if we got X amount of patients, we were going to do this, we were going to do that. And even now, we still have plans in place. For instance, we've learned that. So we ended up using space that we didn't utilize. We ended up using staff members in a different way. So they pretty much stopped the elective, so to speak, operating procedures. So we utilized those staff that now weren't working. And so just say, for instance, may have utilized your unit secretary, spotters to make sure that PPE was properly put on. And even now to this day, one of the things that we've done to ensure that we have space for these patients is we built the modular care unit right across the street and added, you know, some additional beds to care for COVID patients, because we also know that not only will we still have to care for COVID patients, we still have patients that still need to be cared for in general that may, you know, come in for other urgent care issues or surgeries and so forth.
So Dr. Henry, with all of that in mind, you signed up, you volunteered, to be one of the first to take it. Can you talk about that process? And Nurse Hendricks, I want to come to you. Why did you decide to volunteer for this trial, to really be one of the first in line? I think 5 people received it and you're, you know, 2 of the 5 we have here today.
Right. So I think there are several reasons for it. I think, you know, if we're going to get through this, and we, you know, obviously we're going to get through this, the vaccine is how we're going to do that. I believe that. I believe that science, that we have to develop some immunity in order for us to be able to go back to business as usual, because this virus is lethal, right? I am, you know, I'm approaching that age group that is high risk for our mortality from COVID. And I'm going to work, and I do work, and I want to do it safely, right? I don't want to get sick from taking care of patients. And I think that, you know, like Sean, that you wanna be a role model for the community, because we recognize that the hesitancy of people of color to take this vaccine. So I think those are the reasons. I told the folks in the interview that I did yesterday that, you know, normally I might not necessarily be the first one to, you know, bare my arm for a vaccine, but this is not, you know, this is not the flu shot. This is different. It is, the stakes are so much higher here. And even when people are at home, you know, not sick enough to be hospitalized, to me, that group is the most worrisome there, because they can get worse. You know, I had the experience of a family member being ill with COVID, my nephew, who, you know, is a young man, but has diabetes, so in the high risk group. And I felt so helpless with him because A, he's out of state. He wasn't in the state with me. Mm-hmm. I knew my sister, and who's in the state with him, they weren't going to distance themselves from him. So he's there by himself. And then, you know, you think about it, what's happening to these patients? Their oxygen levels are going low. Well, what happens when your oxygen levels go low? You don't make good decisions because your brain's not getting the oxygen it makes. But you have to be dependent on that person to recognize they're sick enough and need to go in and get help. So this is the sort of kind of weird dynamic that goes on with this virus that, you know, you say, oh, he's not sick enough to be in the hospital. You got to be on, you got to need oxygen. You've got to need, you know, so are there many, so many levels to qualify to be in the hospital. It's scary to even have mild disease, because mild disease can get worse. So, you know, that is, you know, why I think it's so important to be vaccinated. Plus, if our economy is going to recover, we can't huddle in our houses anymore, right? We've got to be able to get out and about again. And the only way we're going to get out and about safely is if we're vaccinated.
And so, Nurse Hendricks, I come to you with the same question. I also know that, like Dr. Henry, you also had family members who tested positive. So can you talk about that as a nurse, and then making the decision to volunteer for this stuff, to be the first to get the vaccine?
Yeah, so I, you know, it was, I must say, not a difficult decision for me. I, like Dr. Henry, believe in the science behind it. My mother had COVID. My brother had COVID. My brother-in-law had COVID. My mother spent 2 months in the hospital where, you know, we could not, you know, see her in person. You know, she was depressed. I talked to my mother at one point, and I had to, you know, let the hospital know because they didn't know any better. I said, you know, that's not my mother. Not sure what's, you know, going on, but she felt like she didn't want to live anymore. The isolation, people don't understand, you know, can be very depressing. So even down to being, whether you're quarantined at home for long periods of time, or, you know, in the hospital for long periods of time, because sometimes it takes quite a while to get to a point where you can, you know, go back home, depending on the extent, you know, of your illness. So I knew because, you know, it hit home for me, you know, early on, that there was no hesitance in knowing that I wanted to be vaccinated. That was a common topic, you know, in my household. And once, you know, there was a talk of the vaccine. So we knew that once this vaccine came about, that we were going to definitely be, you know, vaccinated. So the opportunity came about. I was more than willing to have it done, because I just think that we are, you know, at a point where we're playing Russian roulette. If you haven't had it, or had a family member, friend, or somebody that has had COVID at this point, you're just waiting your turn for that knock on the door for it to be you next. And what someone else went through and may not have had to be hospitalized, that doesn't mean that that'll be your experience. We have now hit 300,000 deaths. I mean, immeasurable. You can't even, there's no words for it. So at the end of the day, again, unless we do widespread vaccination so that we can start to build some immunity, with this, you know, with the COVID, I just see it getting worse, and it's going to last longer. And I think that we are ready to, you know, come out of COVID. Kids are ready to go back to school. Individuals are ready to go back to work. And like, you know, Dr. Henry said, it's not doing anything, you know, good for our economy at this time. It's not doing anything good for our family, our families at this point. You know, we want to get back to some type of normalcy. But I think that until we, you know, get vaccinated, that's not going to happen, or it's not going to happen quickly. So we got to, I think, open our minds to the possibility that this is what we need to do because the benefits far outweigh the risk. Again, you see me at work. I got it yesterday. And so, you know, I'm fine. I feel good. Again, and I think that, you know, there's no other way. I think that's something that we have to do. If we want to choose life, we now, I think there's some hope. And that's what the vaccine was for me, because again, it already hit my family. I don't want it to hit my household. So there was no other answer for me.
Dr. Henry, let me come back to you as we begin the wrap up here. So I'm listening to you. I can only imagine for you and Nurse Hendricks that there's at least one weight off your shoulder. For a number of us, that weight of waiting for the door knock, like Nurse Hendricks said, getting the vaccine at least moves you a little bit farther away from that door knock that many of us are waiting for. But for those of us who are in line, Dr. Henry, I mean, I went on the New York Times, I plugged myself in. I think I'm number 287 millionth in line. So this knock that Nurse Hendricks is talking about, yeah. I mean, I got 287 million people who have to get vaccinated with 975 vaccine doses at this point in Maryland before it comes to me. How do you talk to people like me to just kind of hold on? Because what you're trying to tell us is that, okay, I got this vaccine, but you can't get it yet. Just keep doing what you're doing. Well, how do you get us to hold on, Dr. Henry?
That is the challenge, right? Because people have fatigue. They got Rona fatigue, as they say. they are tired of the mask. They are tired of staying in the house. They're tired of the kids being in the house. They're tired of everything, tired of not having Thanksgiving, not having Christmas together, and the prospect of not having Easter together when that comes around in the spring.
I didn't think about that.
That is there. But, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative is, you know, 600,000 deaths, you know, to talk about. You know, if we don't, you know, we got to double down, as I've heard Governor Hogan say. You got to just put on your big girl pants and your big boy pants and put the mask on and, you know, do what you can. And when your time comes, when your number is up, roll your sleeve and go and get that vaccine.
Because there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
We didn't have a vaccine.
The vaccine is the light at the end of the tunnel. We didn't have that, you know, at first, and now we do. So again, why not take that opportunity? Because you can have that one knock and be for the vaccine, or the other knock and be part of that 600,000 that we don't want to get to.
I will not be answering the door at any point. This knock on the door has me thinking. I appreciate both of you joining us. Here's Nurse Hendricks. Sean Hendricks is the Nursing Director of Medicine, Cardiac Services, and the Teller-Sitter Program at the University of Maryland Medical Center. Her family members have been affected by COVID-19. Her mom was in the hospital for 2 months, and she was one of the first to receive the dose here, which we appreciate you. Thank you so much, Nurse Hendricks, for your service.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Sharon Henry, a professor of surgery at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and director of Division of Wound Healing and Metabolism at UMMC's R. Adams Coley Shock Trauma Center. I'm telling you, this is why they say, who gets to be called a doctor, right, Dr. Henry? This is a mouthful, but thank you for your service and thank you for being one of the first to step up to take the vaccine. We appreciate you.
We appreciate the opportunity to have access to it, because we could be waiting as well. So we are happy to have been among the first. And, you know, the vaccines are coming. Unfortunately, it's winter. We know there's a storm coming. We're hoping that's not going to interrupt the flow of the vaccine in. But I know the hospital is making plans to administer those doses and just looking for more to come, so that we can get all our staff treated and then start working on the nursing homes and then start working on the rest of the population.
Thank you so much, Dr. Henry. I'm going to slip you my resume so you can get me hired, so you can get your staff done before that knock comes at my door. Nurse Hendricks and Dr. Henry, thank you so much for joining us. Folks, it's Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us for more conversations as we continue to get the information that you need to make the best decision for your family. Thank you again.